This is Jay Sekulow. Breaking news. Secretary of State Blinken makes an emergency trip to the Ukraine as Russia clears out its embassy.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow.
Already, Ukraine faces in the east of its country that gathering of tens of thousands of Russian troops just across the border, mainly on Russian territory, but also elsewhere as well, that is a credible threat that could be given the order to cross over and would really test the Ukrainian military, you know, because of the relative difference in sophistication.
We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110.
The possibility that Russian and Belarusian forces to the north of Ukraine may be combining forces and potentially pose a threat from there as well. You can get a sense that Ukraine is sort of surrounded on three sides, Crimea in the south, eastern Ukraine and Russia in the east, and then Belarus and Russia from the north. And so that puts Ukraine in an extraordinarily difficult position.
And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody, this is breaking news, and it's something we were following last week, but unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because I think this can affect the world order. And I say that not with hyperbole. If you're watching the news at all in the last 10 hours, I mean, this move of Russia emptying out its embassies in Ukraine tells you a lot. So here's what's happened. The Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, has been sent to Ukraine today as the country there is facing literally an invasion from Russia. At the same time that Secretary Blinken is meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky and the foreign minister, the fact is that the Russians are clearing out their embassies in the Ukraine of almost all personnel. Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, will also travel to Berlin to meet with the foreign minister there, as well as the chancellor. And there's going to be a meeting of what's called the Transatlantic Quad, which is France, Germany, the UK, and the US. The question that we're going to be asking throughout this broadcast, is there any repercussions for Russia's action here that are realistic? And I say that because Germany in particular, but all of Europe, is very dependent upon the Nord Stream pipeline, the gas pipeline. And this creates, of course, a situation where their economic dependency is based on the reality that it is Germany that has been the big advocate of this pipeline, and then, I mean, as well as the rest of Europe, but Russia controls it. Are they going to put their countries at risk, Colonel Smith, over this?
I think they might, and it would certainly make them dependent not just on Russian energy, but on complying with Russian demands as well. You know, one of the things President Trump did during his administration was he put sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, and he started the process of selling massive shipments of liquefied natural gas from the United States to Europe so they would not have to depend on this pipeline. And all of that just in the last 12 months has gone by the wayside. It's a real crisis situation.
Yeah, and then there's a report also that a bipartisan group of senators were in Kiev yesterday to show support and solidarity. What do we know about that?
Yeah, the meeting happened yesterday with President Zelensky. Four Democrats, Jay, three Republicans. Here's the statement from Senator Shaheen after the meeting. She said, "I had a productive meeting with President Zelensky today and made clear that the United States is united across party lines in support of Ukraine against Putin's belligerence. Putin will not be allowed to target our Eastern European partners and allies with consequences." That's great, Jay. The problem is, I'm not sure that Vladimir Putin believes that President Biden will actually do anything that he fears. And there's some evidence from the United States Senate filibustering a sanction bill that President Zelensky supported. The United States Senate might not be willing to either. So the path forward, Jay, is a little uncertain there.
I think we'll get into it when we come back from the break, but that is a big part of the problem here. So, Logan, we'll take calls and comments. We're going to be joined by Rick Grinnell next, our senior advisor for national security and foreign policy. And then former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, our senior counsel for global affairs as well.
Yeah, they'll be both on this show today. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Get your comments in on social media and share right now if you're watching online.
Also, our lawyers at the ACLJ working on a case involving a Christian employee. That case may go to arbitration mediation this week. A lot going on. Depositions in another case as well.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Back to Secular. We are joined uniquely by Rick Grinnell, Senior Advisor for National Security and Foreign Policy. And Dad, as you said, when it comes to issues that we're talking about like we are today with Russia and Ukraine, we have a very unique team and and definitely unique perspective. And to tell you why this is important, I know a lot of people kind of brush a lot of these things off. They seem too international, or why does this really apply? Yeah, but obviously, a lot of people watching, a lot of people are curious.
Yeah, well, this is because we are fortunate to have Rick Grinnell, who not only served in the United Nations for 10 years, but was our ambassador to Germany, Germany playing a major role in this, and of course was the director of national intelligence. Rick, we've got Antony Blinken has been dispatched to Kiev. We've had bipartisan senators, Republicans and Democrats, went to Kiev as well yesterday. Russia is clearing out its embassies. You've been on this broadcast. We've been talking about this a lot. What do you sense is going on here, and why does this matter to the United States?
Well, first of all, let's start with why does it matter if you're sitting here in the United States listening to us. It really matters to your safety. The credibility of the United States, if it goes down, can create instability around the world, and certainly our troops overseas and our allies, and even potentially here at home, we could be increasing the danger and certainly the threat. And we've already seen the problems of an open border. So if you combine the fact that we have an open border with the fact that we are perceived as weak and our enemies and others are trying to take advantage of that weakness by moving into areas that would cause us to be less safe, I think that's a recipe for disaster. Now let's talk about the good news. I try to always focus on that. We have bipartisan senators, Republicans and Democrats, in Ukraine sending a very strong message. That is a fantastic message of unity. Now, will it be enough to overcome the weak diplomacy of the Biden administration? We see Biden weak, and so does the world. Certainly so does Putin. And I fear that with the change in government in Germany and the Europeans looking for some sort of consensus together, that the Biden team is sending just a very strong message of weakness.
One of the things, Rick, that I am very concerned about in all of this is that Russia has the pipeline. Germany wants that pipeline. You were the ambassador to Germany. Does Europe have the capability, the backbone here to really do something if Russia takes action, or are the economic ties too great so that they won't?
It's such a good question, and I just have to go back briefly to the Trump administration, where we believe that Europe was much more than just Paris and Berlin. This current administration, Joe Biden, really strongly believes that Paris and Berlin are the only ones to consult and everybody else comes along. Now, that doesn't help our relationship with Eastern Europeans. If you look at the pipeline, for instance, Europe in a whole is against the pipeline. However, the strong Berlin government, the largest economy in Europe, plays a bigger role, and they've been able to bully the rest of Europe into submission. When Biden says Europe wants the pipeline, that's not true. The Europeans don't want it. The Germans want it. But my fear is it's not just a gas pipeline. It's a pipeline of influence all the way into Europe.
You know, you're right. It is more than a gas pipeline. It is the influence factor. And that, I think, plays significantly into how this resolves itself. Now, you got Ukraine in a situation where basically they're surrounded almost in a sense because Belarus is also working with the Kremlin on this. Colonel Wes Smith has a comment and a question as well. Wes?
Yeah, I mean, that gives them a second place to launch an invasion attack on Ukraine. It is not looking good. It appears all the indicators are that an invasion perhaps is imminent. My question to you, Rick, since you were the ambassador to Germany, though, is there any hope as you read the tea leaves that maybe the new German government would be a little more hawkish on this issue as they stand up to Russia, or are they just going along with what Chancellor Merkel and her government did?
Well, Chancellor Merkel's government had a coalition of the Christian Democrats, her party, and the socialists. The new government is a combination of the socialists and the Green Party. Now, look, I want to oversimplify the Green Party of Germany by saying it's not what Americans think of as a Green Party. It is largely wealthy people who care about quality of life issues. And so think of a lot of suburban women who are charged up in America. They have a strong voice in America, and they have a very strong voice in Germany. I would say the answer is, you know, the German Green Party is against the pipeline, but the socialists are for it. And so it's going to be an interesting combination to see if the Greens can have a very strong voice. I'm a little bit nervous that the two individuals running defense and diplomacy for the Germans are two individuals who are members of the Green Party, but they're both very new to their jobs, and I'm nervous that they are going to be outmaneuvered by the Russians, the rest of Europe, and even the Biden administration.
Talking about negotiations, Rick, we have the situation with Wendy Sherman, who was conducting major negotiations in this situation just days ago. She was involved in previous administrations with negotiations with the North Koreans and with the Iranians leading to the JCPOA. Those negotiations went nowhere. And then we had President Biden on the phone with Vladimir Putin. Do you sense, what is Russia's risk here? Under your administration, previous administration, the risk would have been so significant we wouldn't even be having this conversation, to be blunt. I do not see them invading Ukraine under President Trump and Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State and Rick Grenell as DNI or Ambassador to Germany. I just don't see it. But what's the downside for the Russians now? What's the cost to them?
The political game that the Russians are playing is they want to break NATO. They don't want NATO to be so strong on their doorstep. So they're trying to negotiate right now to say, you need to commit to never allowing Ukraine or others into NATO. They don't want NATO expansion. Now, the irony of this is that the Biden team is so weak on NATO contributions that I fear that Putin has really got a double whammy here. You've got an American administration unwilling to tell the NATO allies, pay your fair share. You've got the Germans with a surplus not paying their fair share. One thing that the Biden team should focus on is getting more contributions into NATO. Trump successfully did that at the same time keeping the Russians at bay. I think that the risk right now for the Russians is to overplay their hand and instead of just threatening, somehow launch a ground war, and then you would unify the Europeans against them, at least in talk. I don't believe the Europeans are ready to take any tough action, and the Biden team has already said, we're going to go along with whatever Europe does. So Putin's got a PR disaster at least on his hands, and hopefully he doesn't move into a ground war, which would really challenge NATO at a time when not all of our NATO allies are paying their fair share.
You know, it's interesting. Secretary Blinken said last week that the U.S. is planning things that we've not done in the past if Russia invades Ukraine. And then we got a very interesting comment on Facebook.
Jeanette on Facebook said, since it appears Russia invasion is imminent, why isn't Biden on TV sending a strong and loud message to Russia to back down? He needs to show leadership. I think a lot of people evoke images of Ronald Reagan. You think of those things when you think of a president making his moment.
Yeah.
And a lot of those questions are being had.
So there's a lot of questions being asked on that, Rick, which is because no moment's being made here. And then you got Anthony Blinken saying, you know, we're gonna do things we haven't done in the past. What possibly could he be talking about?
Well, look, you've got two choices here. You either got war or diplomacy. We already know that the Biden
Israeli famously said diplomacy can be war. And he's right, but go ahead.
Look, the Biden team has already messed up Afghanistan to the point where our threats of military action are not credible right now. And Putin and Xi and a whole bunch of others know that. So the idea that you're going to have a credible threat of military action right now is just dismal. And then when it comes to diplomacy, we already gave the pipeline away and we said we're going to join whatever the Europeans want. So you're really undercutting both options in a Biden administration. And that's what is the strong message of weakness. We're undercutting the military action option. We're undercutting diplomacy. We have Wendy Sherman, who has literally failed in everything that she's done. So I don't see where our strength is right now. And that it falls on Blinken's shoulder. He said diplomacy is back, but it seems to be on its back.
Yeah, that's very true. And here's the concern that I have in this, Rick, and that is world instability, global instability, regional instability, obviously within Europe, but global instability when you have Russia already meddling in other parts of the world, China being quiet while this is all happening. Of course, we're concerned about what their actions are going to be. So all of this together, we only got a minute left. Presents a situation where it could be very destabilizing for the U.S. interest, too.
Well, China's whole game plan has always been look at Russia, Russia's a problem, and meanwhile they're quietly getting away with too much. And so this plays into their hands right now.
Yep.
China is quiet, but they certainly are taking a lot of action and maneuvering where they can and taking full advantage of this situation.
Rick Rennell, Senior Advisor on National Security and Foreign Policy for the American Center for Law and Justice. Rick, thanks for your insights on this. We'll obviously be talking to you later this week. This is a big week.
All right. We'll be taking some phone calls coming up in the next few segments. Also, Mike Pompeo will be joining us later in the show. So give us a call right now. And if you're on hold, stay on hold. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. You can get your comments in on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, wherever you find us. You can find us all those places. Make sure you comment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Let's go ahead and take some calls. And if you want to get on the air, 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Bill, who's calling in Wyoming on line one. You're on the air, Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Sure. The thought came to me that I was wondering if maybe Putin could make this a win-win situation for him. And the fact that he can tell the world, hey, look, you're right, I'll withdraw my troops peaceably. But retrospect or recompensation, give me some land, because it sounds to me something like this happened in history some time ago.
It has, but I don't sense that is where West this is going. It's not a border issue for him.
No, it is part of his ambition to rebuild Russia into something like the old Soviet Empire. And think about this, Jay, already as we sit here, he has troops in eastern Ukraine.
Right.
He took Crimea. He has troops in Georgia. He has troops in Kazakhstan and now in Belarus.
Yep.
This guy's appetite for enlarging Russia in its sphere of influence and its power is unbelievable.
Big. So, Than, I wanted to go to you on this because we're going to talk about HR1 in a moment because that's going to come up. But staying on this topic for a moment, there was a bipartisan group of senators that went and met in Kiev yesterday with President Zelensky. I think, and as Rick said, I think that's really positive that we have this bipartisan sense that in the United States, this is crossing party lines, that everybody knows this is a serious threat.
Yeah, I agree. It's a positive development, Jay. I mean, when I heard Rick talk about it, I couldn't agree more with what he said. I still think, though, that Vladimir Putin is not really that afraid of the United States Senate. And here's why I say that. I mean, I applaud the four Democrat senators that went over to Ukraine to meet with the president. But, Jay, the one thing the Senate was able to accomplish last week was actually filibustering a bill that would have sanctioned Russia over the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. I know that sounds wild, Jay, because they're trying to get rid of the filibuster altogether on the voting rights bill. But there was a bipartisan majority of the United States Senate, 55 votes, Jay, ready to proceed with some sanctions that Ted Cruz had put forward. And 44 senators used the filibuster to block that bill. So, again, I go back to what Rick said. Hostile actors have to believe that someone is willing to use strength to deter their hostile actions. And I think Vladimir Putin looks at this administration, yep, and quite frankly, most of the United States Senate, and doesn't fear what they might do, Jay.
So Margaret Brennan on CBS Face the Nation asked this exact kind of question to Jake Sullivan yesterday. Take a listen.
We've been talking about the president's approval ratings being on the decline since that chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan. This is a risk, not just to foreign policy, but to the president's ability to set bright lines for adversaries.
Look, I'll leave the political analysis to you and others. Here's what I'm focused on. Will the United States and NATO and our allies emerge from this, whatever happens, in a stronger strategic position, and will Russia emerge in a weaker strategic position? That's the test, and that test doesn't get passed tomorrow or the next day or the day after. That test gets passed over weeks and months and years.
Okay, I want to reemphasize what he said here, because this is what, again, is so absurd. That whatever happens in the strong, this is what he's saying. What is the test? Will the United States and NATO and our allies emerge from this basically stronger? Whatever happens in a stronger strategic position, will Russia emerge in a weaker strategic position? Does anybody believe on here that Russia is going to evolve into a weaker strategic position?
Yeah, and I know he's trying to also dodge the question, but it's starting with, look, I'll leave the political analysis to you. If you search Google Jake Sullivan, you know what the first thing that pops up? Jake Sullivan is an American political advisor,
right,
who now also serves as the National Security Advisor of the United States. And so it's one and the same, but clearly just trying to dodge a question. Everyone knows that the numbers are plummeting for approval ratings. And we started talking about it during the Afghanistan situation, that was sort of the tide turning, even for the media. That was the tide where even the liberal media said, okay, we can't just let them get away with everything. And now you're starting to see that unfold.
Wes?
Brendan's question was an excellent question, and it strikes at the heart of the matter. And you're right, Luke, and he dodged it. This wasn't about political analysis. This is about the perception of our enemies to an American president and his lack of leadership. And she wants to know what the impact will be. And he basically refused to answer that question. And he's the national security advisor.
Yeah, well, and Than, you bring up a really good point here. I mean, this is Obama 2.0. We know that. So Jake Sullivan and Wendy Sherman are in charge of this.
Yeah, it's not necessarily about politics, Jay, but it is about policy, and it is about people who will put forward policies of appeasement. You talk about the two people that we've talked about in this broadcast, Jake Sullivan. He was the lead architect of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the Iran deal. Wendy Sherman, she was the lead negotiator of the Iran deal. All of those things were rooted in appeasement. So, you know, if he wants to talk about whether or not Russia will be in a stronger place, the only way you keep Russia from being in a stronger place, Jay, is by not advancing a policy of appeasement. If you're not going to advance a policy of appeasement, the last two people you send are Jake Sullivan and Wendy Sherman.
No, because we know what this is going to. We know what this is going to. I will answer Jake Sullivan's question. Okay, this is his question: will the United States and its allies and NATO's be stronger, strengthened with more solidarity? The answer to that's going to be unfortunately no. And will Russia be weaker? And the answer to that, unfortunately, is no. Now, they say that there are these things that we have not done in the past, which I'm going to ask Secretary Pompeo about because I can't even imagine what those are. Let me go to a domestic situation for a moment here because, Than, today, I guess, or tonight, there may be an attempt on the HR1, which you think is going to fail.
Well, yeah, they've just gaveled into session, Jay. They are on debate on the voting rights bill. Remember, just a quick reminder, this is the NASA bill that was hollowed out, and the two voting rights bills were dumped into it. Last week when we were covering this, Jay, Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema came out and said, we will not nuke the filibuster to pass this bill. Jay, Leader Schumer is on the bill anyway. He is pushing forward without them. And so just very concisely, the way this will play out, I expect there will be an effort to bring debate to a close, to end the filibuster and invoke cloture probably tomorrow night, Jay. That will fail. It needs 60 votes. But here's what we're watching for. Leader Schumer is meeting with his conference tonight at 5 o'clock, and he is trying to decide whether or not to try to nuke the filibuster either tomorrow night or later in the week or not at all. Jay, two members of his caucus have already said they won't do that. It looks like he's going to try it anyway, though.
All right. People always want to know what the response is. We had that from Pam on Facebook, said, my question is, if Russia invades Ukraine, what happens with the Biden administration? Well, Jake Sullivan kind of laid out a bit of a plan, and it's sort of what they said for Afghanistan as well. Where are they going to take action? Listen, and listen to who they blame.
If Russia does move, we will take measures that go at their economy, that go at their strategic position in Europe, that strengthen the solidarity of NATO. And what we just saw this past week in Brussels at the NATO headquarters was 30 allies speaking as one after years under the previous administration where NATO was fractured and beginning to lose focus.
NATO wasn't fractured. NATO countries had to actually support NATO, which got them more engaged and more involved, Colonel Smith.
We were more unified under the previous administration at NATO. There was conflict at the beginning because President Trump told the truth.
Well, yeah, give us some money.
But they started paying up. But not only that, whenever President Biden unilaterally decided on this chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan, he did not even inform our NATO allies in Afghanistan in advance.
Right.
That fractures the alliance.
We got a lot more to talk about and a lot more coming up.
We do. We have a full half hour coming up. If you don't get us on your local station, you can find us broadcasting live right now on social media, on Facebook. Just search for Jay Sekulow. We're also available on YouTube. Search ACLJ. You'll find our channel there right now broadcasting live. If you're hearing this pre-recorded, you can find the rest of the show also later on archived on our social media platforms as well as on our podcast feed and at ACLJ.org. That may be the most easiest direct way for you to watch this show each and every day. Just go to ACLJ.org and support the work of the ACLJ. Second half hour coming up. Give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jay Seculo.
Hey everybody, welcome to the broadcast. There's a lot going on, and we've got an emergency situation where Secretary of State Antony Blinken has been sent to Ukraine. That follows up on the day before yesterday. Seven members of the United States Senate, four Democrats, three Republicans, went to Ukraine, met with President Zelensky. Russia is on the border with massive a number of troops and armaments. Belarus president announcing that they too would participate. So you've got a potentially huge conflict. The EU nations are now concerned whether they'll do anything or not is debatable. But as Rick Grenell just said, this all has a direct impact on the United States because global instability costs us money, costs us energy, I'm talking about our energy resources, and puts us in a vulnerable state. And it's always dangerous for the region and for the Middle East. And this is happening simultaneously while Secretary of State Blinken says the U.S. is planning things that we've not done in the past, which I'm going to ask Secretary Pompeo about, but I'll ask you, Colonel Smith, because that doesn't sound to me like there's a plan.
No, that is a hollow threat. Other than, you know, advancing Ukraine's application for NATO membership, they're an aspirant, which is too late to do that now, and arming them with offensive weapons, which we've been really, really slow to do.
Although under the previous administration, the Trump administration did arm them.
Yes.
That wasn't that long ago.
Yes, they did.
So they were getting armed.
Last night, the United Kingdom stepped up and is going to give them anti-tank weapons because the Biden administration refused to give them anti-tank weapons. Yeah,
can I say something here? And this is where I get, folks, you got to pay attention to this. I know you are. This is how, I'm not saying this will happen here, but this is how world war starts.
Yes.
This is how you have, I would say, let's not call it a world war. Let's call it global conflict. Because now you've got, as Wes just said, you've got England, the United Kingdom, saying we will provide armaments to Ukraine. The United States saying we will do things we've never done before, whatever that means. Germany doesn't seem to want to really engage.
No. It's a very fractured Europe. What we need to do is try and keep NATO cohesive, even though Europe is fractured. That's hard to do. And here's the thing, Jay, our adversaries, not just in Europe, but around the world, they are watching this.
So, Than, we do have seven members of the United States Senate were there yesterday. That's not insignificant.
It's very significant, Jay. I mean, look, I think the message to the oppressed is actually a pretty good one right here. I mean, seven bipartisan members of the United States Senate traveled over to President Zelensky, reiterated their support. Supposedly, Secretary of State Blinken is doing the same thing today. I hope he echoes their message. But the question I would have for Secretary Blinken is actually not so much about his message to Zelensky. What about the message to the oppressor, though, Jay? What is his message going to be to Vladimir Putin? Because he can say all he wants to President Zelensky that they're going to back him up. But unless he gives a strong message to the people who are harassing Zelensky, I'm not sure if that's going to do much, Jay. So it's a good message from the senators, a good message from the secretary today. But what are they saying to Vladimir Putin?
All right, we got a comment that came in on Facebook about that specifically. It said, this from Luis, who said, Putin has zero concern about Biden doing anything of consequences to his plans of Russia. And I think a lot of people feel that way, which is, it doesn't matter.
And it does, though. These are NATO allies involved because it affects
Putin,
Europe.
Right.
But I don't think Putin feels threatened. I don't think Putin feels that he's on guard. I don't think he's saying, I think he's calculating what the consequences are, and the consequences are not, don't appear to be significant. And then you have on top of that, and I think this also points to this, the Belarus president coming out west and saying, oh, by the way, we'll help you if you need help, Russia.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now the other side of Ukraine is exposed.
Right. They actually are threatened from the south with Crimea, from the east with the Russian troops, and now in the north from a joint exercise, quote unquote, between Russia and Belarus on the Ukrainian border.
I mean, it's incredible. Now we've got Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State, coming up, our senior counsel for global affairs. Folks, we don't give you just talking points. We're giving you real analysis because we're engaged with this in Washington, frankly, around the globe, at the United Nations. We know this issue. And it's very, very, very concerning on where this is going. And it's escalating very quickly. Logan, we'll have Mike Pompeo joining us next.
Yep, the next segment, Mike Pompeo will be on, and we'll be taking your calls as well. 1-800-684-3110. Again, 1-800-684-3110. If you ever want to be on the air, this is a great time to do it. How do you feel like this specifically impacts you in your life and what Russia and involvement in Ukraine really could do to America? Just give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back with more on Secular.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Secular. We are now joined by Senior Counsel for Global Affairs and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who will be joining us just right now. We got him live. And that's what we've talked about earlier, is the expertise of the,
yes,
the people who can be on these panels for the ACLJ. Yep. When it comes to these topics that maybe aren't your number one headline stories, but are the stories
although
that you really
is getting a headline today.
But it is the number one you should be focused on right now.
Yes. So, Mike, great to have you as back on the broadcast. I know we were talking about this last week, and here we go again. I want to get right into this. Anthony Blinken, your successor, has said that the U.S. is planning things that we've not done in the past as it relates to Russia if they invade Ukraine. A, do you think that this threat of invasion is for real, and what could those possibly be, things we've not done in the past?
Oh, Jay, thanks for letting me back on today. The threat is very real. The challenge is very serious. Vladimir Putin doesn't have any concerns that the Biden administration will do something that will impose real costs on him. So I think that makes the risk all that much greater to the West. I don't think he believes NATO is unified. I think he thinks the Eastern European countries and the Western ones have a different view of the risk. So yes, this threat is very real. And Vladimir Putin will use it in a way that aggrandizes himself, keeps himself in power, preserves his sphere of influence. Glad to see Secretary Blinken is going there to support the Ukrainian people. That's the right approach. We should send increased armaments, weapon systems. We should make clear that violating Ukrainian sovereignty is unacceptable. That's something we will not stand for. And when he says we'll do things we've not done before, I don't know what he's speaking about, but it's possible that there are sanctions beyond even those that were put in place in the Trump administration that they would be prepared to do, including potentially disconnecting Russia from what's called SWIFT. It's really the global economic system, the global cash transfer payment system. Okay. This would be a significant sanction. And I think Vladimir Putin would have to think twice about taking action if he believed that the Biden administration had credibility with respect to that. I hope Secretary Blinken can convey the seriousness with which they're taking this.
Yes, Secretary Pompeo, on that front, let me ask this. On that front, just dealing with the ability of basically disconnecting Russia from the greater economic systems. Do you think my concern here is what Europe will tolerate? Would Europe tolerate that kind of action, especially the Germans?
Well, Jay, first instance, the United States can largely effectuate this on its own. It would need some assistance, but we did it with respect to the Iranians during our administration. The Europeans tried their darndest to get around that, creating something called INSTEX. It just never worked because of American economic power. So I think the United States could actually execute this in a way that would effectuate that objective, whether the Europeans agree or not. Second, the reason that I think if the Europeans fight it isn't because we couldn't do it, but because the Biden administration won't. But we saw this with Nord Stream 2. Germany said, hey, we need this. This is a good deal. Our former chancellor runs a good chunk of this. Is going to make a ton of money off of this. We need to move forward with this pipeline. And the United States acquiesced to Russia and to Germany. It might well happen again here.
So in addition to being Secretary of State, of course, you were the director of the CIA. Under President Obama, the CIA acting CIA director was Michael Morell. He was one of them. He said this about America's credibility. He said, if we back down from our support or if Russia invades, we lose credibility. The tragedy that unfolded with our Afghanistan withdrawal already severely damaged the U.S. credibility under the Biden administration. Did that embolden President Putin to make the Ukraine push? In other words, did our exit from Afghanistan and the way we did it impact, because it seems like the moves on Ukraine have happened since then?
Jay, I think it's undoubted that world leaders across the globe, friends, those who are trying to figure out whether they want to be friends, and our adversaries all watched the way in which President Biden evacuated Afghanistan, the tragedy, 13 Americans killed, lots of Americans left behind, without a plan, frankly, without consulting our allies in a sufficient way. I think they all saw that, and it's caused them to be emboldened. Weakness often begets risk for the United States of America. So when I hear Mike Morell, who I know and who did good work at the CIA for many years, when I hear him say that, someone who was deeply part of the Democrat establishment, it's really quite something. I think it suggests this isn't partisan. This isn't political. This is about keeping Americans from my home state of Kansas and California and New York, all across the country, safe from the threats that are presented to us by what's happening. To preserve the American way of life means we need to keep the American traditions, and that includes defending our friends when they're in trouble.
Colonel Smith?
Yeah, you know, the second and third order effects of all this going on, I think, are alarming. You know, the UAE was attacked by the Houthi rebels with this drone attack, you know, over the weekend. I'm wondering, you know, it seems like we have backed away not only from our allies in other places, but in the Middle East. We paused sales to the UAE for their airplanes, and we've quit giving, you know, Saudi Arabia some of the defensive missile systems. And I think the Houthi rebels are emboldened. Of course, they're a proxy of Iran. What do you see as the connection between this perception that we are weak in places like dealing with Putin and how it impacts China, Taiwan, the Middle East, and all the other countries?
You went around the world pretty nicely there. You just missed Chairman Kim firing missiles into the ocean. The list of emboldened leaders is pretty long. These authoritarian regimes understand one thing. They understand power. Not military power exclusively, diplomatic power, economic power, all the things one does when they build alliances. When they see weakness, you'll see them move. What the Iranians did, and I talk about it being the Iranians, not the Houthis. The Houthis are a bunch of tribesmen, right? These are Iranian missiles filed from Yemen by the Iranians themselves into Abu Dhabi. That when you see that, they recognize that the United States' response is to go to Vienna and try and cut a deal to try and appease the Iranians. That portends bad things in each of these places, whether it's with China and Xi Jinping or Chairman Kim in North Korea or Vladimir Putin in Russia. They will all see that if you threaten and coerce, you can make moves and the United States won't do the simple things to preserve America and defend our security here at home.
I want to go back to the situation with Russia and Ukraine. You wrote in a piece that's posted at ACLJ.org called Priorities for a Strong, Secure America in 2022. And this is what you wrote. Reports from just this past month indicated that Team Biden suggested that Ukraine cede its authority over the Donbass region, making it an autonomous zone rather than territory under the control of the Ukrainian government in order to cool tensions with Russia. Where does that end up leading?
We know how this ends in Europe, yeah. Right? Step at a time. We all know precisely how this moves forward, especially today when the threats are now both physical and kinetic, but also cyber and political and economic. We know precisely how this control will be continue to be exerted. I hearken back to when Vladimir Putin engaged in activity that we didn't like and we pushed back. We immediately saw that he met steel. He saw that he met steel, and we had a very different conversations after that. This is how diplomacy and power are used around the world. I hope this administration figures out how to do this.
You know, I quoted this earlier, but Benjamin Disraeli famously said that, you know, diplomacy as war. I mean, he wrote an entire chapter of a book on diplomacy as an act of war, in saying you could use diplomacy for impact as if it was war. I mean, because of the nature of that type of diplomacy. My question here is, you've sat down with these people. You know Vladimir Putin. You know the foreign minister of Russia. You know President Zelensky. If you were in charge of the government in the United States, what would be the next move?
Jay, I like to think we wouldn't have gotten here.
Yes.
But given that we're here, the next move would be precisely what you just saw. You'd send your Secretary of State to Ukraine, but you wouldn't send them there unarmed. And I don't mean militarily. Right. You would send him there with a toolkit where he could credibly speak to the Ukrainian people. He could credibly speak to the Ukrainian government. He could speak to the Poles and the Estonians and the Lithuanians, all of whom see themselves as the next meal on the table for Vladimir Putin if NATO and the United States don't step forward and provide the security. Those are the things one would do. It's not about sending tens of thousands of soldiers. Our administration didn't behave that way. And yet we were able to push back against these very regimes that this administration is struggling to secure our freedom against.
Last question. For the people that are watching, like you said, in Kansas, in North Carolina, in California, wherever they might be, the risk factor here, if this is not handled correctly?
The risk factor is that over some period of time, we will lose our capacity to be that defender of freedom. And when we lose that, the risk is that we lose our freedoms here at home as well. They're not a one-to-one. It's not perfect agency, but they're deeply connected. And for America to abandon an ally, our friends, the Australians, the Japanese, the South Koreans, the Europeans, our friends in the Gulf, the Saudis, the Emiratis, they will see this and they will begin to cut deals with authoritarian regimes that leave the United States and its economy out of the quintessential places that we need to be today. I saw the Saudis today talking to the Chinese on energy in a way that they wouldn't have had to do in the Trump administration.
Yeah, I saw that. And you know, is exactly what you said is right, Mike. That is the repercussions of this weakness will have impact in the rest of the, not just the region in Europe, but the rest of the world. Mike Pompeo, Senior Global Counsel for Global Affairs, former Secretary of State, former Director of the CIA. Tremendous that we have you as part of this team. Thank you, Mike. We appreciate it.
All right. We'll be back with the last segment of Seculo for the day. If you want to get your phone calls in, it's the last chance to do it. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. You can also get your comments on social media, on Facebook and on YouTube. We'll be right back with more on Seculo.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. and we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Back to Secula. Let's go ahead and take some calls. Barbara's calling in New Jersey on line two. Barbara, you're on the air. And if you want to get on the air, 1-800-684-3110.
Barbara, hey, Barbara. Welcome.
Oh, hi. How are I support you guys all
Thanks.
Monthly for years.
Appreciate
you're the best.
That.
Okay, so my question is something that I always ask myself. The Biden administration, like the Obama administration, their policies that make us weaker, do you guys think that they actually think that makes us safer, or is it more sinister and that they want us weaker because they have more in common with authoritarian governments and kind of want to be in that club?
I think first of all, your question is a great question, but I think it's multidimensional and very complicated. So let me try to break it down, and then I'll ask others to jump in. What is the motivation? They are operating under the let's kind of coalesce with Europe and what Europe wants to do. And the problem in this situation, Than, is Europe is not clear as to what they want to do. So the one good thing that happened in this, Barbara, is that the United States sent a bipartisan delegation to President Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. That was positive because that's sending a message. But that was the legislative branch, not the executive branch. The executive branch dispatches Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, right move, as Mike Pompeo said, Than. The difficulty is, does he have, again quoting from Mike, in his toolkit enough to do anything here? That is the real question, which is what Barbara's asking.
Yeah, and he almost certainly does not have those tools in his toolkit. I mean, look, removing Russia from the SWIFT system would be a very significant move. Jay, Vladimir Putin needs to at least believe that that's on the table. Now, whether or not it's the right tool to use or not is another discussion, but Vladimir Putin has to believe it's on the table. And look, Jay, we talked about the Senate action. This is, since it's in the area of foreign affairs, it's almost exclusively an executive branch play. And I just see the Biden team rolling out the same playbook that the Obama team rolled out. And look, to the caller's question, I think they believe that leveling the playing field across the world is better for the entire world. But Jay, that is blind to history. The rest of the world flourishes when America is strong and America uses her strength for the betterment of others. Leveling the playing field and intentionally weakening America will not do anyone around the world any good.
And this leading from behind, which was President Obama's theory, which was the Obama-Biden policy, rather than America first and leading, I think will have disastrous consequences. But Secretary Pompeo mentioned SWIFT, which is the economic system that everyone's tied into. Disconnecting Russia from that could have significant consequences. My question, Wes, is will Europe tolerate that consequence? Because it would have consequences for them, too.
Yeah, it would, definitely. I think Mike Pompeo is right, though. We really have the capability, because we are the largest financial gorilla in the cage, to force it anyway, and it'd be difficult for them to get around it. Back to Barbara's question real quick, though. Why is the Biden administration doing these kinds of things? I think it has to do with their worldview, and it's a naive worldview. They want consensus versus U.S. leadership. They fail to really protect our United States strategic interest first, and that somehow they have an aversion to conflict, not just military conflict. They have an aversion to political conflict, and they refuse to take a stand. And somehow they want to believe, even though it's proven over and over again, this is an incorrect belief, they want to believe that the rest of the world looks at the world the same way that we do and have the same motives, and they don't.
We've got a very interesting question coming in, a comment coming on Facebook.
Yeah,
we have a couple, actually.
Joseph said it's a stark comparison that at the same time there is a concern about Russia invading Ukraine. We see the Democrats trying to force federal takeovers of elections, pushing us further out from our Constitution. We also had from Michael, who said, we watched this administration drop the ball. with Afghanistan? How are we supposed to trust them in dealing with Russia?
Well, I think the situation in Afghanistan, the pullout in Afghanistan and the way it was mishandled is the reason why Putin feels emboldened. We could not handle a pullout with out of Afghanistan and in a failure of, I think, significant proportions, not only tragic loss of lives, both of Americans and our friends in Afghanistan, but we let the Taliban control it. I mean, it was a series of errors that were made that had devastating consequences. So does that make things look weak for the United States? Yes. At the same time, I think we have to be cognizant of that Europe's appetite for engagement here, even if Ukraine's invaded, may not be that strong. They may not, Colonel Smith, have the stamina and ability to say to Russia, if you do this, you're going to be out of the economic system, which would be devastating, by the way, mm-hmm. for the Russians. But I'm not sure that Europe has the stomach for it. I keep saying that.
I know, and I have the same doubts. I truly do. This idea of removing Russia from SWIFT, though, is probably the strongest card we have to play right now because we're not going to take military action. What concerns me, Jay, also, is that we're having all this going on with Russia and Ukraine. Don't forget, you know, after the Olympics, it's more than likely that China is going to invade Taiwan. And we're not talking about much in the media right now, but we don't even know how close Iran is to a breakout on a nuclear weapon. We have three dangerous hotspots in the world, and we're not doing a very good job of addressing them and prepping for them. Russia and Ukraine and Putin's aggression writ large, China and Taiwan and Iran.
Let me, Than, as we get ready to close this segment out and close the broadcast out, I don't want to, we touched on it so briefly that we didn't give it fair attention. And that is H.R. 1, which would federalize elections, is going to be an attempt, I guess. They're going to attempt to move on that tonight, is the plan.
Yeah, actually, Jay, while we've been on the air, Leader Schumer took to the floor of the United States Senate, gaveled into session, and actually verbally said, look, we're going to try to make an effort to change the filibuster rules, change the precedent of the Senate in order to pass this legislation. I mean, here's the truth, Jay. Just shoot our listeners straight. He does not have the votes to do this. Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema have already told him that they will not go along with nuking the filibuster to pass this. But, Jay, the United States Senate is on this bill right now that would take over control from the states of the electoral system. And they're going to go so far, Jay, as to probably tomorrow night, maybe Thursday, but I think tomorrow is probably the most likely time frame. He's so dedicated to it, Jay, that even though he knows he doesn't have the votes to do it, for the first time in history, the United States Senate is going to try to nuke the filibuster for legislation. It's a pretty significant move that Leader Schumer's making here.
But you do think, Than, that we are going to prevail on this one and we'll have beaten back H.R. 1?
I do, and it's going to be a significant win for separation of powers and for federalism. I would tell you, I think they're going to fall short of the 60 votes on cloture, Jay, and then if they do take the vote to nuke the filibuster, I don't think they're going to get over 48, maybe not even 48.
Yeah, which would be a big win, folks. We've been on top of this and working on this now for months. This would be a federal takeover of the elections, exactly what the Constitution doesn't authorize. You want to try to get one more comment in?
Yeah, I have a comment from John on YouTube who said, what policy changes have caused these moves from Russia and China? Seems like the last administration had everything in check foreign policy-wise.
Well, we projected strength because we were strong. Our military was the strongest it ever was. Our diplomats were given tools in their toolkit. We were in direct negotiations with Kim Jong-un, for instance, who's now flying missiles again into the China Sea and over towards Japan. We were discussing at the highest levels with Vladimir Putin. They knew we were serious. They knew we were tough. We're not projecting that right now.
Weakness invites aggression, and perceived weakness also invites aggression from our adversaries.
And that's what, so I think it's how you present yourself. I mean, I call it the Ministry of Presence. You got to be there. You got to project something. But Mike Pompeo said something very important here. What's in the toolkit for the diplomats? Like I said, Disraeli said diplomacy can be war. But if you're going to use diplomacy as war, you better have ammunition in your toolkit to really back it up.
All right. I think that's going to do it for Secular today.
It is. And I just want to say something to our members and friends out there at ACLJ.org. And that is this. Your support of the ACLJ lets us have Mike Pompeo as part of our team, Rick Grinnell, and all the experts you're seeing on this broadcast today, and to actually take action. So we appreciate that. ACLJ.org to support the work of the ACLJ. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.